RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the What Wednesday edition?
Yeah.
Of the Dark to Light podcast with...
Impeachment Day Val.
Yes, happy Impeachment Day.
Happy Impeachment Day, everybody. It's number one trending on Twitter.
Today, behind CM, well, right behind that is CM Punk.
Oh.
Which is awesome, to be honest.
They're equally important to Americans.
Yeah.
Impeachment Day and CM, what is CM Punk coming back to WWE or
yes!
something?
Yes.
I guess the MMA didn't work out too well.
No.
Well, this I just noticed it right now. Has the number one trending, Impeachment Day, which is just goes to show what this is all marketed toward, the kind of ignorance this is marketed toward.
The type of people who think that Trump will be impeached?
Or the type of people think that impeachment is today. There are probably people out there who understand that this, even if they... there's probably plenty that know that today's not the day that impeachment's happening. It's all related to the word impeachment. But just because it's trending, there are at least hundreds of thousands who think today is the day he's impeached. Well, that's how stupidity is preyed upon.
Those hundreds of thousands of people, we can just put them in the garbage pail.
What are you going to do?
Put them in the garbage pail.
I guess so.
That's what I think we should do. So yes. Done. All right, good. Thank you. And I'm Beans, by the way. Still haven't introduced myself, in case you guys didn't know. Why you didn't? So today, what was I going to say? Oh, yesterday, sorry. Dan Bongino announced that he is starting his own news aggregator, like Drudge. But it'll be called the Bongino Report.
Okay. So we got Bongino Report and that Liberty
Daily
Report. Daily.
And then Gab Trends, which is so pissed off. Poor Gab. I didn't have any idea what Gab Trends was. Do you know what it is?
No.
If you go to GabTrends.com, it is what is trending on the internet. And it's just like Drudge Report. And people can vote on and comment on the articles live. So there's today's top, breaking, and trending. And, you know, to be honest with you, I don't really see... how this is like more driven by people than, I don't know if I like this. And it lists them by website too, like BitChute.com, Daily Mail, Washington Examiner, Breitbart, what are their articles? It's like an aggregator this is cool actually. It says around the web and then all of the outlets are there and their top articles are listed underneath them.
Gotcha. I'm sure that there's a lot of people who are going to try to do this now. Which ain't a bad thing.
No.
As far as aggregating news and putting it on out there. But, yes, it's totally necessary. I mean, if we're talking about decentralization, then we even need to be able to decentralize those places on the internet that we all usually went to and patronized. Because nobody is really immune to what's going on.
No, definitely not. I have a lot of things today, Frank.
Let's get to them.
The first thing I want to talk about is this story by the New York Times that came out about John Solomon. They literally spend an entire article on John Solomon. The man Trump trusts for news on Ukraine.
That's the headline?
Yes.
Hmm.
Who is John Solomon? His name popped up frequently in closed-door testimony in the impeachment query. He's a regular on Hannity.
And That's it. It's over then. That's it. Done. That's all you need to know.
He is a regular on Hannity. And you know what's funny? It says here, you know, like they talk about how... Oh, goodness. They talk about how the right-wing media amplifies itself and makes it more legitimate and blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, they're ignoring completely that this echo chamber that the legacy media perpetrates over and over again is even used in investigative ways with the corrupt federal government in the same way with circular, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, well they do their own investigating. Like they'll go sifting through trash piles, or they'll go out to a jail in Thailand to interview hookers in jail. I mean, they're very investigative, the left wing media. So you can't take that from them.
I'm wrong. They start at 10, these hearings. You can't take that from them. But at the same time, the thing that bothers me about this is that this is not what they're portraying the right wing as doing is not what they do. Like, just because Hannity has Solomon on to break a story and then Rush Limbaugh talks about that doesn't mean that there's anything. I mean, why is there something wrong with spreading breaking news? Why?
I guess there's nothing wrong with it in its very nature. You would want news to spread, especially if it's breaking. The only thing is that what kind of impact is that news going to make? And what kind of impacts are trying to be limited or exacerbated? So there's that.
The impact it's going to make right now is that they're going to write a hit piece about it because they can't have John Solomon's information be valid because, you know, he's just one of those right-wing conspiracy theorist guys, you know?
Absolutely.
Forget about all his long tenure. They also go in there to smear him about how The Hill started putting opinion contributor underneath his name. But the really interesting thing is this. If you go down, all the way down the article, let me count the paragraphs here. It's 20th paragraph, okay? In late March, Mr. Solomon and his team published pieces in The Hill making sensational claims of misconduct at the State Department. The American ambassador to Ukraine, a career foreign service officer, which makes her better than anyone else, of course, who assumed her post during the Obama administration, had privately badmouthed Trump and separately had previously provided to Yuri Lutsenko, Ukraine's prosecutor general, a list of individuals that Mr. Lutsenko should not prosecute. In conservative circles, where suspicion of anti-Trump officials working inside the government runs high, that allegation fit with the narrative. And then they go down and they interview him, two more paragraphs down, in an interview with the New York Times last month. Lutsenko blamed the confusion in the reporting because they said that he withdrew that they had given him a list. But he never did. He says he blamed the confusion of this reporting on the interpreter who handled his interview with The Hill. He insisted that Yovanovitch had in fact asked him not to target certain politicians and activists who worked with the embassy on its anti-corruption efforts. 22 paragraphs in, they debunk their own previous ad nauseum reporting and admit that Lutsenko did get a list from Yovanovitch of all the people he's not allowed to prosecute. Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. Wow. It's really something else. And if you see some of the other headlines here, and of course, all the play up to today now too. Oh man.
Listen to this. Frank, keep going. I got to read this to you when you're done.
No, go. You go first.
Sean Hannity talks about John Solomon, and then he gets picked up on Rush and Levin. The effect is that the reporting carries weight with conservative audiences, which gives it an authority when they're hearing it from multiple sources every day.
Repeating something over and over gives it authority, I guess. Okay.
In their world. When Mr. Solomon appears on television and radio, Mr. Hannity and other conservative hosts often identify him as an investigative reporter and cite his decades of experience at news organizations like the AP. But his critics see this as sleight of hand to give his writing a veneer of nonpartisan objectivity. Now listen to this next sentence. Part of the issue is that for years he was identified with the mainstream media.
Isn't this the mainstream media reporting on it? Is that the issue? So part of the issue with him is that he's been identified with the mainstream media. Does that make him less credible? If so, then why are we listening to you?
It's just ridiculous.
The part of the problem is he's been affiliated with us for years.
So people think he's real, but he's not. He was just always a wolf in sheep's clothing when in countless awards in his long, storied career as an investigative journalist.
My problem with all of this is to say that, you know, to even to harp on the fact, yes, if you say things over and over again, it'll start taking on a life of its own. I mean, people can even convince themselves of a falsehood if they say things and they rationalize things over and over again. You can convince yourself to do horrible, atrocious things if your mind has been conditioned in a certain way, and that could be done by others or yourselves. But to go in and admit that a key component to brainwashing people, saying things over and over again, yeah, I understand that. And I understand that can work both ways. But the problem here is that in one direction, let's say John Solomon's direction, the direction he's walking in, there is verifiable proof. There is evidence for what he is saying. In the other direction, the Jake Tappers of the world, the Wolf Blitzers of the world, the Brian Stelters of the world, they have only speculation and hopes, and their repetitious approach to all of the narratives they have been pushing have ultimately come to be fruitless in the end. I mean, how can you even suggest something like that going on when there is real action being going on, verified by, you know, all the things that Solomon is reporting on is actually verified by real action that's happening behind the scenes and elsewhere, whereas the other people who have been talking about everything from Russia to hookers to porn stars have been left with nothing in their hands afterwards.
You are perfect. You are like the best, because you have no idea what we're going to talk about usually before we start. Sometimes we go over a brief outline, right? But today we didn't do it today. Listen to this. This was on tap. I wanted to go through this entire interview with this guy and dissect it with you, because it's that ridiculous. To your point, Malcolm Nance yesterday on MSNBC. Do you know who Malcolm Nance is?
Oh.
He's a former U.S. Navy intelligence officer who turned into like an MSNBC pundit who's written several books. And he did this interview yesterday on Morning Joe with Willie Geist, where he talks about his book and how Donald Trump is a Russian asset still to this day. And I can't not listen to it. I hope they don't. Hey. They're going to push a commercial on me, of course. Let's listen to some. We'll stop it as we go. If you want to stop it, you just tell me. I'll push pause and we'll discuss, because it is so – it's dangerous. This guy is dangerous.
Well, if this is what he's going to be talking about, then everybody just keep in mind what was just – everything that was just written about John Solomon, a guy whose work has been verified – has been verified every step of the way.
Yep.
Everything from the Julian Assange, James Comey blockade with the SSCI. I mean, everything. The leaks coming out of the Senate Intelligence Committee. That guy Wolf.
He's been right every time.
Right every time. Right every time. Now, whether or not there are harsh punishments and punitive action that is as a result of all of these exposures and exposés, that's something else. But he's been right all along the way. Where there has been smoke, there has been fire.
Mm-hmm.
But for everybody else to say, you have to be wary, because if somebody like John Solomon says things over and over again, people start thinking it's true. Well, it is true. I mean, it is undeniable that Hillary Clinton is a criminal. James Comey listed her crimes on television. Just because she wasn't thrown in jail doesn't mean she's innocent of those crimes. I mean, it is true. And for people to listen to people like Stelter, who now have nothing to do but talk about how many typos that have popped up in the president's tweets, that is repetitious nonsense. The Russia stuff is nonsense. There has been nothing to be able to substantiate any of the stuff yet. They keep repeating it.
Listen, you're going to get furious listening to this. I was furious this morning.
A report in The Focus. But what did you see back then when you would come on shows like this and try to throw up the flair about it that the rest of us didn't know?
Well, you call. The first notice I gave was on July 26th from Philadelphia's Independence Hall, where I came on air and I saw what was unfolding before the whole nation. And I said, the United States is under attack in a wide-ranging information warfare attack, a political attack designed to make Donald Trump president. And it would take about a year before anyone would really understand that. In fact, I wrote a book 6 weeks before the election, and virtually everything that happened. And there's a reason for that. I'm not a journalist. I'm a former intelligence operator.
Operative, he was going to say?
You know, there's a reason. There is also a reason why, you know, they can plant things there. First of all, what you see coming out of these liberty-hating assholes constantly is they're always hedging their bets, and they're always setting up some sort of a backstop of excuses if something goes wrong. They always issue their excuses for failure ahead of time, just in case, just so they can show themselves to be a little bit more self-deprecating and aware of, you know, the landscape out there. Now, we have to understand it's very, very dangerous out there, because, you know, there are always Russian things creeping around the corner, and this Donald Trump character doesn't look trustworthy, and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's actually smart, if you're a snake, to lay out all the things you think may be able to go wrong, so that you can go and if there ever is a day of defeat, you can say, well, listen, we talked about this in the past. I guess it all came true. We are under attack. And even if you win by a large or slim margin, you can still even reach back and say, there is evidence that these things happened. Thankfully, we overcame it all, but we need to actually put more protections in place so that our democracy is greatly secured in future
plausible
years.
Plausible deniability.
Oh, it's all plausible. It's all nonsense. This guy's an intelligence operative. They talk about, they are constantly soaking people. They're soaking us.
We're not even a minute in yet. Just wait until you start to hear the substance of what he says.
Well, we see things differently. We can predict activities that must be in place for an event to occur. So if you hack the DNC and you use Russian military intelligence, you're trying to replicate Watergate. And at that time, the nominee was Donald Trump. He was very close to Russia. Therefore, he was being supported by Russia and expected to benefit from Russia's efforts. All of that would be validated in the Mueller report and all subsequent reports.
And it didn't. And it wasn't.
That's a complete lie. It's a complete lie.
Even just the basic comment of he's very close to Russia. Where is this closeness?
There's going to be a point in time where he explains the closeness, and it is all nonsense. It's not even true. Now, MSNBC has this guy on for 6 minutes and 20 seconds. He's going to start to right now get into Fancy Bear and Cozy Bear, which are the two tools that CrowdStrike says were used to hack the DNC servers. And I've done a lot of work here, so I know my facts surrounding this. And even CrowdStrike had to come out and correct that. So this man is either living in the past or
doing his job.
Right, exactly. That's what he's doing. I mean, there is no other eye. You cannot sit up there in that chair and say this nonsense and believe it's true.
We're a nation of spies and lawyers. That's just what this is. It's sad to say it, because I know there are good people that are buried under the rubble out there somewhere, trying to do what they can to even wriggle a hand free. Okay, but we are a nation, a government of spies and lawyers. It is impossible. It is impossible.
Here we go.
Without giving up sources and methods, what did you see way back then that so many others didn't see?
Well, just the fact that he says without giving up sources and methods is enough to let you know this guy's running an operation, and they laugh. No.
Yeah, well, he can't give up sources and methods. It's his imagination. Well, my source is me. my imaginary friends that I made in second grade that have never left me.
Can I ask you a question real quick?
Yeah,
go ahead. You used Voldemort the other day?
Yeah.
Had you heard that used before in reference to Charmella?
No, why?
Because a politician stole it from you.
Who?
I'm going to find it.
I mean, it's not that much of a leap. I wouldn't, if I heard somebody else say it at this point, I wouldn't think that they stole it from me. It was just the most obvious thing that came to mind. And I don't even watch. I haven't watched one Harry Potter film, by the way. I just know that after all these years of pop culture references, he's the one who can't be named.
Dan Bishop.
I don't even know who that is.
Rep Dan Bishop said he's North Carolina's rep for the 9th District.
When did he say it?
November 11th.
Okay, so it's after we said it.
Yeah.
He did steal it from you.
He's a listener. I refuse to cower before the authoritarian intimidation campaign. He's not Voldemort, and he's not a bona fide whistleblower. Even if he were, he wouldn't be entitled to secrecy. Eric Ciaramella is a deep state conspirator. He needs to testify now.
Thank you, Representative Bishop. I had multi-grain toast, and I think one of the grains has settled on my epiglottis.
Is it still there?
Yeah, I think it's gone.
Okay, let's go back to Malcolm.
Yes, I had written a book prior to that called Hacking ISIS. And in Hacking ISIS, we were going through all of ISIS's cyber operations. But there were two. One hacking of TV5, one of the major channels in Paris, and the other hacking the Warsaw Stock Exchange in Poland that looked like ISIS, but were in fact Russian military intelligence. Fancy bear. ATP-28.
Now, he there gives it away. It looked like ISIS, but it was actually Russia. So there is a chance it could have looked like Russia, but not been Russia.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, does he ever go into how they confirmed that it was Russia, even though it looked like ISIS?
We're going to see.
29, Russian intelligence. When we saw that, we said, oh, look, the Russians are out doing these false flag operations. But when I first heard the DNC was hacked, right, the capability of that hacking required a state actor. And the only other state that would do that would be China, North Korea, or Russia. And then when CrowdStrike announced that it was ATP-28 and ATP-29, Fancy Bear and Cozy Bear, it was very obvious. Russia was trying to do Watergate.
Oh, wow.
Now, there's a lot to unpack out of that little bit of nonsense that garbled out of his damn mouth, right?
Yep.
First of all, it was obvious it was Russia. It was it could only have been a state actor to hack the DNC. That doesn't even explore the 30,000 different options that are available. Could it have been a leak? Could it have been a hack from inside the United States? Because, you know, there's like 100,000 other things that it could have been, but it's got to be a state actor. And it was either Russia, China, or North Korea. I narrowed it down.
Well, you're able to narrow it down when you accept CrowdStrike as the alpha and the omega. When CrowdStrike's diagnosis of everything is the alpha and the omega of your entire narrative, then of course you can whittle it down to one of two things. Because you've been completely limited to one or two things, and they're all very politically expedient things.
Here.
We had already seen dozens of attempts of Russian military intelligence to hack the White House, the Pentagon, and others. That immediately set off a chain of activities in my brain based on Russian intelligence activities I had seen in the Cold War. And it was very clear it was an attack on the nation.
Now, let me ask you this question. I mean, we can focus on Donald Trump. And here we have your book, The Plot to Betray America, how Team Trump is trying to do X, Y, and Z. What is the pre-story? What is the prologue to Trump? There has to be something in the soil that makes this possible. So give us a sense of the backstory that makes all of this possible in your
right. And I write extensively about that in the book. And in fact, it was Luke Harding at The Guardian who came out with the first indicators that Donald Trump had been under Russian intelligence surveillance for a very long time, early as 1977.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Oh my God! It's bad. That's even worse than the Chris Hayes segment about was Donald Trump a Russian asset in the 1980s? Now they're going to the 70s.
Just you wait, Frank.
They're going back to the 70s now.
It's something for me to play an entire 6-minute-long clip on this show. It really is something because I listened to this morning and I was like, oh my goodness. This man is dangerous. Are you ready? Listen to this.
his first wife, Ivana. And Ivana was from the Czech Republic, which at that time was Czechoslovakia. Their intelligence agency, the STB, had her communications with, you know, between the United States and the Czech Republic under surveillance. And they knew an enormous amount of information about Donald Trump between 1977 and the mid-80s. And
then If this is true, if they got the Donald Trump through Ivana, then I also want I want investigations opened up into Bette Midler, Goldie Hawn, and Diane Keaton, because Ivana made appearance in that movie First Wives Club in the 90s, and they were all in that.
Look, I'm sitting yesterday watching television at my mom and dad's, and on the television I see that they're making a reality series called Cartel Wives, where they're following around, what's his name that was arrested? El Chapo, his wife, as though she's a reality star while she's running the cartel.
If it bleeds, it leads.
It's absolutely, I can't even comprehend what the is happening to this world. What the is happening? I'm bleeping myself. Okay.
Surveillance for a very long time, as early as 1977 with his first wife, an enormous amount of information about Donald Trump between 1977 and the mid-80s. And then in the mid-80s, Donald was starting to express an interest in building Trump Tower, Moscow. But more importantly, word from her family that he was trying to consider running for president against George Herbert Walker Bush, who was, of course, the former director of the CIA and the vice president of the United States. So Russia became very interested in him. They had 10 years of collection, and then they brought him to Moscow for what he wanted, which was Trump Tower. But from that moment on, an enormous dossier of information was collected on him, and more importantly, how to exploit him. And his exploit, his simple exploit, as we call it, in the intelligence community, is he is avaricious to a fault. He wants money. They now, in the modern Russia, with a former KGB director as president, they have money. They know how to exploit people. They know how to manipulate people. And they know how to buy people.
And, you know, when you look at it, you go back.
I'm beside myself.
You're as mad as I was.
I don't even know where to start.
There's 3 minutes left, and I want you to say what you're thinking, because it's probably what I was thinking.
I mean, I'm actually confused as to where to start, because you can start talking about the actual change, the change in what Russia is today as compared to the Soviet state it was in the 70s and the 80s. And the ideology, the communist ideology that has largely been dropped. They may still have their police state in order, but they have adopted market principles out there. They have a better tax system than we do with the flat tax out there. You know, I mean, so you think about what these people in the media are and where they got their views from, the original Soviet infiltration. And now how it's all being used to being pegged on Donald Trump. For what reason? Like they're mixing up eras and ideologies and motivations. They're taking Donald Trump's business acumen and all of his accomplishments as a private citizen, and they're weaponizing it decades after the fact. Why aren't we asking whether or not the Scottish government is influencing Donald Trump? He's got golf courses there too. I don't. It's just so sick and convenient, but not so much. It's just lazy. It's lazy. But they also know that their viewers, especially on MSNBC or CNN, are also lazy and intellectual paraplegics. That's just what they are.
And they're going to listen to this and believe every word of it.
Yeah, they're going to say, oh my God, the whole time. Wow. Here we were thinking, yeah, maybe Donald Trump was a little obnoxious in his day. He would pop up on every award show and the movie cameos and this and that. And he was a big blustery, but he was always all American. And now they're inviting you to go and rethink your memories in different ways. They're asking you to go back and rewrite your memories of not only just the man, but the culture in the United States. That this guy could the whole time this guy was a Russian double agent. And what does that even mean? That the Soviets had something on him. So what does that have to do with this? With Russia today?
He's going
to
tie into it, but like it's funny because there was spawned from this interview an argument amongst asset and agent and what each of them are and how they're used. And because he's using the terms almost interchangeably and they
but
mean.
But where's the intelligence? Where's the blackmail?
They don't have. There is none. There
exactly.
is none.
If you've been collecting on this guy either directly or through his wives or through his potential business deals that obviously never went through, where is the leverage? You are almost over 3 years into this man's presidency, and you're trying every which way to destroy him and discredit his ideas. So even if you were able to get him out of office, whoever came on in better have a different set of ideas because they're going to be destroyed too. And yet you have nothing but these fake impeachment hearings and all that stuff. Where is the dirt that they have spent 40 years collecting?
Hasn't made an appearance yet.
Not yet. They're waiting. They still have the ace up the sleeve for some reason.
Yeah, yeah. They're holding on to that as if they couldn't have used it immediately.
In the book, and you go all the way back to the 1970s, as you just said, Putin and Russia never could have dreamed in the 1980s when they were looking at him as just an asset, maybe a useful asset, that he would elevate to become the president of the United States, the best possible asset they could have. So at what point did they say, okay, this guy is a serious candidate. We need to start using him and to use information that we have to bring him in close and make sure he wins the election.
Sure. You know, and I have elements of all of that in all three books, but this book is specifically starts off about how Putin, supervillain, right, goes and focuses based on his, you know, when Putin was a baby spy in East Germany, his job was to manipulate people. It was to turn people into traitors. I sat in his office in Dresden, and you could just feel the vibe.
He's a freaking traitor, this guy. He sat in Putin's office. He must be a Russian asset, Frank, right?
He's one of ours, though. He's allowed to do things like this.
I forgot. I forgot that there was different. Shame on me.
That this was a man who, while everybody else, the old KGB guys, were getting drunk, he was out meeting people and bringing those spies over to the Soviet Union. But when East Germany collapsed, he took the manuals. He took all the files of everyone that he had ever flipped and that the East Germans had flipped and brought that into the business world when it became the modern Russia. So Donald Trump in 2014, by 2014, he was making enormous quantities of money from the Russian oligarchy. But that
no, he wasn't. No, he wasn't.
Hey, you know
no,
what?
No, he wasn't.
You know what? He's talking about when East Germany fell, and he's talking about the Soviet Union's collapse, and how in comes Vladimir Putin to scoop up all of the crumbs and to scoop up all of the information that was collected on all flipped assets. Well, then let's get into the Venona papers. Let's get into Venona. Okay, how about we complete Project Venona? After the fall of the Soviet Union, we got all of the confirmation that Joseph McCarthy ever needed. And you know who has never, ever been fingered in that? Donald Trump.
Isn't that crazy?
The Venona pay. You want to talk about flipped assets going back to the 1930s and beyond. Let's talk about Project Venona. If you want to get that, but no, because that would take us into another direction altogether. It would actually explain why the media is the way it is.
What about his dad? Was his dad in the Venona papers?
No, I don't.
His uncle? Was his uncle in there?
If there was anything like that published, if there was anything like that, because of course in 91 when it came out, 92 when we started hearing about it, it was given minimal coverage and away we went. If a Trump had shown up in there, what would that mean? That okay, well, the Trumps are in the Venona papers. They were known assets since the 1970s. But we're just going to leave them alone and keep developing real estate in Manhattan. Because maybe one day he'll be president, and we can then take him down.
We'll hold on to it just in case he decides.
Yeah, that's
run.
Forward thinking.
Yep.
came very clear to the Russians. This man could be go from a useful idiot, which he was. You know, he wasn't a communist. He just wanted to build a tower in 1988. But move from a useful idiot onto an unwitting asset where he's being used and he doesn't know it. And then by 2014, it's pretty clear that he knows it when they back Trump Tower Moscow 2.0. And then they put a set of rose-colored glasses on his face. Donald Trump sees the world only through Moscow's point of view, because right. he knows that is where an enormous quantity of money that he cannot access exists and will be made available to him. Is he a next step, a Russian asset? Where he is aware of those activities, Robert Mueller said yes.
That he didn't. No, he didn't. What nonsense is this?
And how do you make somebody a lackey for your cause for years and years after a deal that never happened? How does a deal that never happened make you put on rose-colored glasses that only makes you see things through the guise of what Russia may want to see the world? That's like me going to a BMW dealership and looking into the latest model of convertible that they have over there and ultimately realizing this ain't going to work out. I can't afford it. The conditions aren't right. I got to leave. And I end up going to drive a Nissan instead, like I really did. And what does that mean? Because of the Beamer that I never drove off the lot with for the rest of my life, I'm going to see the world through BMW's eyes? What the hell does that mean? There's no incentive. There's not even any incentive to do that. A failed deal?
Yeah, I mean, not only that, but it was more than one failed deal.
So two, okay, strike two.
Right. This is absolutely, it's insanity. So there's a reason I'm doing this. I know that it's a little monotonous to listen to this whole thing, but there's a reason. I'll get to it in a second.
Where that he was going to benefit from Russia. And even today, we just had that testimony on Capitol Hill, which said Donald Trump canceled a naval exercise because it would hurt Russia's feelings. Mick Mulvaney said they canceled the first Javelin shipment because of how it would look to Russia. We have subordinated our national...
Hearings are well underway.
Yes, the hearings are well underway. See, this is the thing, people. We're back. You guys didn't notice a thing. It's modern technology at work, right?
Right.
But we just had about, a half hour of 40 minutes, maybe?
Well, we spoke for 40 minutes, and then we were knocked off for 20.
Yeah. So we just spent 20 minutes trying to figure out why my freaking computer stopped working. And so now we're well into these impeachment hearings. And it seems to you like all of a sudden out of nowhere, we stopped talking about this idiot Malcolm Nance. And now we're talking about something completely different. But the whole point of what we were trying to go over with this clip that I wanted everyone to listen to and subject themselves to is that even now, as this entire thing is deconstructing and now, you know, Russia's over, they picked up Ukraine. This is where we're at now. The left is coming out and attacking people like Nance that are talking about the Russia thing as though everyone will forget what they put us through for three full years. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's back to the primitive. That's it.
Yeah.
So let the cycle run out. You go on back and you just keep drilling away at people's softened minds.
It's insanity. And the Daily Beast wrote a whole hit piece on Nance about this. And Seth
the
Abrams.
The Daily Beast?
Yes.
They hit him?
Yes.
Or they're supporting what he's saying?
No.
What? The Daily Beast?
Yes.
What's that about?
It's this. MSNBC's Malcolm Nance. Trump was on the Russians' radar as early as 1977. Now, MSNBC analyst Malcolm Nance, long one of the network's loudest voices when it comes to pushing Russiagate conspiracies, this is the Daily Beast, claimed Tuesday morning that President Donald Trump is a Russian asset who was on the Russians' radar as early as 1977 via his first marriage to Ivana Trump. He appeared on Morning Joe in a segment first spotted by Mediate to hawk his latest Trump-centric Russia book and was immediately congratulated by host Willie Geist for being out front before most people, being aware of the Kremlin's attempts to interfere. And then he goes on to talk about that he's a retired Navy intelligence operator. And he went on to boast that he saw early in Trump's presidential campaign that the U.S. was under attack by a wide-ranging information warfare attack. Pointing to the Russia's hack of DNC, Nance said that blah, 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 blah. But Nance then dove headfirst into conspiratorial waters about Trump.
Well, you know, good on them. Good on them. I don't know.
And they say about Geist, meanwhile, suggested he bought what Nance was selling, remarking that Putin and Russia never could have dreamed in the 1980s that when they looked at Trump as an asset, that he'd eventually be president. The host would go on to ask Nance when the Russians then decided to start using that information to make sure Trump was elected. The rest of it is just a hit piece against Nance and how stupid this entire thing was. From the Daily Beast.
Well, and I gotta say, that's great to hear.
More people than the Daily Beast. It was all kinds of left-wing folks saying this is absolutely ridiculous. How could he say? But they've said this themselves. Like the Daily Beast here acts like they've never said that before about Trump.
Mm-hmm.
But they've done it. There's something happening here.
Are they setting themselves? Are they trying to bank on some unbiased, you know, some credibility in the unbiased department for future subjects that they're going to have to drop some loads on?
I don't know. I mean, I think that's got to be something.
Picking their battles a little bit.
Yeah, I mean that's got to be some part of it because, and again, what's his name? Taibbi and Seth Abramson have gotten into it, and even Max Tanney, several MSN employees. Told us months ago that many network producers have reservations about booking Nance, given his tendency to do this sort of thing.
When was this again? When did Nance go on and do this whole act?
Yesterday.
Yesterday. And Daily Beast publishes today.
Yeah. Yesterday.
Oh, yesterday.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah. And you could take a look at Seth Abramson's Twitter account. Max Taibbi said to him, how many times have you pushed the asterisk key this year? Do you know what I'm talking about? How he always uses the freaking stars. You know who Seth Abramson is, right?
Yeah.
Stars around every word. It's insanity. So there was that. And I think there's one more thing that we can just go over really quickly before we have to end, sadly. Swalwell. Have you been catching some of the things that he's been talking about?
I saw one slip of his recently about oh, man, what was it? It was about the impeachment nonsense. I forget what the hell it even was now. But he's been making the rounds.
It was two things. He said Donald Trump has the opportunity to prove his innocence.
That's right. The presumption of innocence thing. That's what I saw.
He also said that for the most part, none of these witnesses are corroborating with one another.
It's serious stuff. It's serious stuff when you hear a United States. Oh, my Siri just jumped because I said serious.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah, that's weird. It's alarming stuff to hear a representative in the United States Congress completely flip the presumption of innocence in this country around on its head, where it's not a matter of he and his colleagues having to prove without a shadow of a doubt that a crime was being committed, but that we're starting off with a guilty verdict and Donald Trump is up against the full might of the full might and the resources of the entrenched bureaucracy inside of our government to prove that he is in fact innocent of any wrongdoing.
He has to prove it.
Yeah. I mean, that just means that you can literally accuse anybody of anything these days, manufacture any kind of a reason for to be suspicious of someone, and then the subject of your ire then has to spend all of their time and all of their resources and expend all their political capital.
How do you even prove that you're innocent of something that never happened? How do you do it? There's no way to do it.
Oh, I know, which is why this is designed to go on for months. This is designed to bring us until at least March of 2020.
I really hope they're not able to keep this going till March.
They at least want to get us through the holiday season.
Seriously? How many people are they going to freaking interview? How are they going to keep this going till March or even the holiday? How are they going to do that?
Well,
I'm not saying you're wrong.
Well, think about this. I mean, when did we get the Mueller report? First of all, we know that the Robert Mueller Russia investigation was over a long, long time ago, and they stretched that out. They stretched that out with help of the media, with help of, oh, this one and that one. We have to interview someone else. We may have found something else. So we know how long they stretched out just the official investigation. And then we got the report in what, March? Wasn't it March that we got the report?
Yes.
Then you got March to April, 1 month, April to May, May to June, June to July, July to August. And we were still having those hearings from Jerry Nadler in August. That's 5 months after the report came out. So
there was
I mean,
a lot more people involved in that, though.
Yeah. Well, listen, they're calling all their banners every other week. You have another fellow traveler who's willing to put their entire careers on the line, putting on their uniforms and all their pins and chevrons, and they're going on out there with their fat faces and doing whatever the hell they have to do to help out and toe the company line. So you know what? Maybe there's not. The one thing I've learned here is that out of all the names that we already know, there are at least 300 names of people that we have yet to learn about who are willing to do whatever the hell is necessary to keep this this Titanic from sinking.
I got
5 months. 5 months after the Mueller report. Oh, 5 months from now is what? We're coming up on the middle of November, and it's just starting today, November 13th, November to December. January.
That would be April of next year.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Frank.
Listen to this.
We should also forget about them trying to obtain nude pictures of Trump from Russian pranksters who pretended to be Ukrainian officials.
That was Nunes today.
We should also forget about them.
Pulling up the prank that Shifty Shift fell for.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. Listen, we gave him about 50 minutes today because we had all those problems and I had other things, but like I know that I played a 6 minute long interview with interruption of commentary for you guys, but I wanted to get that out there so that we understood exactly where we stand with some of these people and how dangerous they are. Like, do you agree they're dangerous?
Very.
That was a dangerous interview. That was it really riled me up. It really did. So,
this is why we are in for a very, very long, grueling fight for years and years after Donald Trump is gone. No matter when his presidency ends, whether it's 2024 or
2028.
Yeah, it just doesn't matter. We have it because you're listening to that kind of poisoning of the well that we were listening just to a little bit with that Nance guy, that poisoning of the well that was so lovingly embraced by the media itself, that translates into the way that children are educated now.
Yeah.
That translates into the way that entertainment is packaged and the messaging that is slipped into entertainment on a network or on a big screen level. This is just that you're talking about at least a 20-year fight
to take it all back.
Well, as far as to affect change in a new generation.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a clog in the plumbing that has to be pushed out, and it's going to take a while to just run through the entire building. And that's if we are on the offensive the entire time. That's if we have the momentum the entire time. But we are dealing with arsonists. They will burn down everything. They don't care because they don't love anything.
No. I was talking to my dad about this yesterday, actually. I was saying how joyless and soulless and vapid the people that we're up against are.
Yeah.
And another tidbit, I was watching Blacklist with my husband, and there was about 20 seconds worth of ridiculous propaganda in regards to Syria muzzled in there in between all the rest of the stuff that they were doing. And I was like, nobody would recognize it if they had no idea. It's so subtly placed.
Well, I started picking that up in the I missed the entire last season of Homeland. I had kept Homeland was really one of those series that went downhill after after season three or something like that. I forget what the hell it was. Season two was the absolute peak of it. It was unbelievable. But we just committed to it. I think the final season is coming out. And I think Lauren and I sat down for the first couple of episodes of the second to last season after Quinn dies. And it was getting a little hard for me because they were trying to inject Russia. They're trying to inject all this stuff. And you can see the contemporary messaging coming on in. I also saw a lot of people reversing the roles because you can tell that there are roles that were designed for a lot of these series in 2016 and 17 that were designed for Hillary Clinton. You can tell that a lot of people banked on Hillary Clinton being president come January 2017. Especially Homeland. I don't care what people say. They were banking on her being president. And when Donald Trump became president, they left in the woman that is completely typecast as Hillary Clinton, but they made her pretty much the villain at that point. And they started giving all of the traits that they project onto Trump onto this. So you can just tell. You can just tell what's going on. It's so odd. Everything is just so odd.
It is very weird. Very weird. Well, I hope everyone liked today. It felt a little disjointed to me, but you know, what do I know? Hopefully everyone liked the show today.
Well, you can't deal. It's technical stuff.
Nonsense. You guys have been listening to the Dark Delight Podcast with
Impeachment Day Val.
And me, Beans. You guys can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, iHeartRadio, and RadioInfluence.com. And we have a big surprise coming soon, which I can't talk about, but I'll tell you, we have a big surprise coming soon. Talk to you guys later.
Later.
Bye.
This is an MJ Morning Show podcast quick fix on Radio Influence.
I said, hey, anything you want to know, anything you want us to address on the podcast? And he said, crotchety old man. Well, first of all, there's just a ton of crotchety old man stories we can tell. In a world these days where morning shows, they fake all of these calls, those things are real.
In a world where morning shows fake phone calls.
Well, Fester, you were in on one of the famous ones is the porta potty. Milton Fludge Cow. Oh, thank God you've answered. Where Milton Fludge Cow gets stuck in a porta potty off of the interstate. And you actually helped me record that.
Would you hold the garbage can over
his
head?
No, it was a cooler.
It was a cooler.
It was a cooler. Yeah.
It was a Gatorade cooler.
Yeah. And you got to explain how you did that. You should explain the sound effects because I never knew that was a cooler. I always just pictured a garbage can over your head as the...
Because I had to get that sound of, yeah, you know, inside like a plastic, hollow plastic enclosure.
Yeah.
And it was a big cooler that we found back in the promotions department.
You stuck your head in that thing and did the call?
Well, he held it over my head, and I've got the microphone in front of me to get that sound.
I think there's a picture of us doing that call.
On one of the CDs.
Yeah.
There is. These calls are real, and sometimes I'd have to call 6, 7, 8, 10 places with these crazy, preposterous concepts for them to bite.
It was out west.
Yeah.
Because you fell off a cliff. We had to find a place where they had geographic cliffs.
I remember that.
And this porta potty company was somewhere, what do you think it was? Out west somewhere?
Maybe Colorado or someplace. Someplace where there's a lot of cliffs. Yeah, maybe Oregon.
Didn't my porta potty roll down the side of a cliff off of the interstate?
You couldn't pull that off Florida.
You guys really thought this out, too.
Yeah, that should make sense.
Those calls were real. And I'd come up with ideas. Yeah. And that's how I came up with the porta potty. I think I came up, it was like, you know, waste management or waste disposal or what a porta potty. And I was like, you know what? Milton Fludge Cow gets stuck in a porta potty. And that's how I came up with that.
The MJ Morning Show podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, MJMorningShow.com, and RadioInfluence.com.